Well, wish you a happy new year as well. I can do that from the front. That's my privilege. Great to be with you at the start of 2023. Well, we did Christmas slightly differently this year, Sally and I. Before Christmas, we went away for a few days. We were back in time for the presents and the food. It'd be stupid, wouldn't it, to miss that. But we had a lovely couple of days away in a cottage with a log fire and some Netflix on the television. And the sun was so beautiful, midwinter sun, just low in the sky all day long, misty fields. And so we took the opportunity to go out for walks as well. It's a kind of very restful time, but we did get a bit of exercise in. And whenever we go for walks, we like to call in at churches. I don't know if you do that, but little kind of village churches. So we walked up to a little village called Bolton by Bolland. Get it right. Bolton by Bolland. It's always interesting to see what's inside churches, isn't it? The family tombs we saw, the furniture, the things that are, these kind of boards with all the names written on. And basically, the kind of, you learn a little bit about what's going on in the parish or what went on in the parish in the past. So we were interesting to see this. I don't know if you can bring this picture up on the screen. If anyone can do that for us. You on that song? Yeah. So we turned the corner in this tiny little church, and there was these three characters. Who are they? The three. Yeah, I was hoping for more younger children, but that's fine. I'm happy with that. Okay, no, well, you got the answer right. So those are indeed the three wise men, fashioned in cloth and gold foil. And we went to another bit of the church, and we turned the corner and we saw this. And who's this? It's, yep, the three wise men again, indeed. So this time not done in cloth, but made of wool, I think beautifully knitted. I'm going to assume by the ladies of the parish, but I don't know if I can still say that. then we went to another bit of the church, kind of liked exploring it, and we turned a corner and we saw this. And what do you think this is? Yeah, well, we've got the three wise men again. And this time, a beautifully carved, actually beautiful little carved figures. Maybe Italian, I'm not sure, but they were kind of beautiful, almost like from a nativity scene, spread out along the table there. And then there was one more thing that we spotted. And again, it's the three wise men on a stained glass window, paying homage to the Lord Jesus. So you can see they went big on the three wise men in Bolton by Bolland. Not quite sure why. They didn't have a tree. We have our tree and our candles, but they, for some reason, really made it. It wasn't even dedicated to the wise men. It's something that we don't often talk about, actually. For some reason, the Sunday after Christmas, the wise men are kind of there. And so they're only ever part of, as it were, the traditional view of Christmas. And those traditional views of Christmas can sometimes be wrong, can't they? There were no robins in Bethlehem. There was no snow in Bethlehem. And I don't think there was any holly either. So how do we know? How do we know whether three kings really visited Jesus? Well, we can only know that, can't we, by going back to the Bible. That's the only way we can check what really happened. And when we look at the story of the three kings, we find that it's really a story about two kings, and neither of them came from the east, and neither of them followed a star. Well, the first king we come across in verse 1 of our reading this morning. Now, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, in the days of Herod the king, there he is, the first king. This is the king who ruled Judah, but he ruled it very nervously. Because really, the Romans were in charge. This was just a province that he was given as a kind of to rule over in his own way. Now, you know what it's like when somebody is watching you doing something important. It makes you feel a bit nervous, doesn't it? If you're younger and you're chopping up vegetables, for example, or if you're doing some very careful handwriting. Maybe you're writing on a card, making sure that you don't make any mistakes. Maybe you're just dealing with a tricky spreadsheet at work, and you know the boss is going to be looking over it. These kind of feelings come to us when we're doing something important, but also when we know that someone is watching us. Now, Herod was someone who was very nervous. He was always looking over his shoulder, wondering what would happen to him. He was a bit of a wreck, really. So imagine if you're like that, and someday some strange people come to you, and they say this, verse 1. Now, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, in the days of Herod the king, behold, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem. Notice, how many wise men were there? It doesn't tell us, does it? That's a great one for Bible quizzes. I know Becky's pointed that out to me before. Remember that. If anyone asks you in a Bible quiz, the answer is we don't know. So we don't know how many. Matthew doesn't tell us. Were they kings? No, we're only told that they are wise men. So it's worth checking, especially on these kind of passages that we don't often look at here. So here's what the wise men said, verse 2. Where is he who has been born king of the Jews? For we saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him. When Herod the king heard this, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. So this first king, Herod, is being told about the second king, a king of the Jews, King Jesus, of course. So nervous Herod, well, he knows that this second king is going to be a threat, another threat on top of the threat he already has. And there is no doubt, the strangers know, don't they, what the star means. They know that a king has been born, and they commit huge resources to that understanding and belief, and they travel all this distance to see the king. They know that this second king is a better king. In fact, that he is the best king. And so they come to worship him. That's the reason they give verse 2. Maybe that's the reason why they're called wise by Matthew. They certainly can read the stars, can't they? They work out that there's something different in the sky. Something's changed. They've been watching it very carefully. And they know that something's going to happen. But there's a piece of the puzzle that's missing. There's something that they don't know. Did you notice what it was? They said, where is he? Where is he? Now, what do you do when you want to know where something is? If it's something little, you might have, I don't know if you remember those things years ago, that like these little things that you could attach to your key ring and you could whistle. And then they go, it would beep, and now your keys, suddenly you find them under the cushion or behind the fridge or whatever. Well, so that's one thing. Nowadays, they've got like more modern versions. They're called tiles, I think, and you can search for them with your phone. I know Nigel used to have one, but he might have lost it. I haven't seen it lately. anyway, they're great for little things, aren't they? And if you're looking for something big, you might use something like Google, or if you've been traveling over Christmas, you no doubt, particularly somewhere new, you no doubt have used SatNav in the car or on your phones. So that's how you find big things. We were in Decathlon on Friday, big, huge sports store in Stockport. And I have an app on my phone called Find My Friends. This time it was Find My Wife, because in this huge store, we'd kind of lost track of each other, and I didn't know where she was, and I looked everywhere, and then the only thing I thought of doing, well, I'll just look on my, she might have left, she might have gone without me, I don't know. So I looked on the phone to see where she was, and there was my blue dot, and then there was the other blue dot over in the running section, so I kind of made my way across there and found her. So it works for small things, it works for big things, and it works for medium-sized things like my wife. What do you do if you want to find a king? What do you need to find a king? Well, the strangers who've traveled all this way ask Herod. Herod himself is pretty clueless. Did you notice? He had no Google, he had no sat-nav, and he just asked his own chief priests and scribes in the palace. That's all he had to hand. And he does that in verse 4. He inquired of them where the Christ, the King of the Jews, that is, was to be born. And these people in the palace, they knew straight away. They say it straight away, the passage from Micah that we had read earlier. A passage that's actually a prophecy that was written 700 years earlier. They knew, too, that when the strangers asked about the King of the Jews, which is the name they gave him, they knew that the strangers were really asking about the Christ, about the Messiah, the Anointed One, the ones that the Jews had always been waiting for. So what you need to find a king is a prophecy. So they, verse 5, the palace wise men, they told him the answer, in Bethlehem of Judea. For so it is written by the prophet, and you, O Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For from you shall come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel. Now notice, the wise men from the east know, they now know, and they go. But look, the so-called wise men in Herod's palace, they also know. They knew straight away, didn't they, about this prophecy. And they've no doubt seen the star, but they didn't go. They didn't go. If you know, you go. But if you know just in your head, if you know something intellectually, you might not go. You might not respond to it and react to it. They knew it in their heads, but it wasn't enough. And if you know, that is, if you have faith, or what the Bible calls wisdom, then you go. You go. That is true wisdom. So the wise men go, and we'll see what they do in a few minutes. Thanks, Tom. Please do be seated. Well, where do we get to? Matthew picks up the story again in verse 9. After listening to the king, they went on their way, and behold, the star they had seen when it rose went before them, until it came to rest over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. What's it like? What's it like when you're absolutely bursting with joy, when there's such joy spilling out of you, when you just can't stop smiling? Maybe it's the delight that you feel when a plan comes together, when it works like clockwork, when all the timings work and everything's in its right place and you get the right result at the end of it. It's a great feeling, isn't it? Maybe it's about the exams, the revision that you did for exams, and they worked, all that work paid off and the exam was passed. Maybe it's about practicing a particular sport, maybe a shooting or a cycling or whatever, but it all works to plan and you just feel that joy when you get down that hill or you get up that hill, whatever it might be. Maybe it's about the best present that you got last Sunday. Did you rejoice exceedingly with great joy about that Lego, about that iPad? The Lego, Johnny can relate to that. The iPad, or the trouser press. There always used to be a trouser press. I don't know why. I didn't get one of them. But whatever you were doing a week ago, it's only a week ago, any rejoicing that you had was nothing like the rejoicing that the wise men are conveyed as exhibiting here. It was bursting out of them, verse 10. When they saw the star, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. Because these are strangers, remember, who've looked at the sky, at their charts. They've thought over ancient texts. These are magi. These are people who are, I guess, scientists of their day in a way. And seeing his star, they set off on their long and arduous journey. They had the final piece of the puzzle. The plan worked after the final piece is put into place. The star, his star, they call it, put by God, led them. You'd be thrilled. And they were. They were absolutely thrilled to be in this place because, verse 11, look, they'd found this new king. And going into the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they fell down and worshipped him. Then opening their treasures, they offered him gifts, gold and frankincense and myrrh. So what was the purpose of the journey? Well, it wasn't scientific. They knew about the stars, they studied them, they understood them. It wasn't curiosity. They weren't just going to see a new celebrity, this new king. It wasn't about diplomacy. They weren't just bringing gifts to the king, from their own nation that they come from. So all of those things may have been true, but Matthew tells us what the true purpose, the real purpose of their visit was. The plan that they had from start to finish was to worship King Jesus. That is their task. And worship, of course, means to give honor to somebody who deserves it, somebody who truly deserves it. Somebody who is truly great deserves our worship. So verse 11, they fell down and worshipped him. And for us, our Christian life really begins when we give proper honor to King Jesus. Whatever attracts us to him, whatever brought us here this morning, Christian life, new life, happens when we see who Jesus really is, that he is the King to be worshipped. Now, Matthew, of all gospel writers, wants us to see this. He's the only one that gives us this account of the wise men. Why does he particularly want to tell us this story? Why is it particularly important to Matthew above all other gospel writers? Well, Matthew is particularly concerned about royalty. Royalty is very important to Matthew. You may remember that in chapter 1 of the gospel, he begins with this long genealogy, which is almost never read in church, but is really, really important to Matthew because it shows that Joseph is in the royal line of David. And he's saying to Jews reading the gospel that Jesus is the king. He is the one you have been waiting for. He is this Messiah that's been spoken about in our passage. And he piles up the proof for this. That's his intention. And so in chapter 2, it follows on very logically that the wise men, however many there are, 3 or 20 or 50, we don't know, they symbolize the nations coming to the true king. And that king is that not just for the Jews, but for the whole world. The whole world will end up calling him king. And if we look at the whole sweep of Matthew's gospel from start to finish, you see that it has this beautiful symmetry, a kind of mirroring going on in the whole gospel. At the start, all nations come to Jesus. And if you remember, at the end, the king, King Jesus, sends his disciples and all of us out to all nations. And that's something we're going to be looking at as a church through this new year, the early part of this new year, as we study the book of Acts, just how the church and how we go out into the world with this great message. So the story of the wise men, although we don't often look at it, is really important. And it's important to notice the three responses to Jesus in this passage. Which one will you be? Will you be like Herod? Will you be fearful that King Jesus is just someone who looks over your shoulder, checking your homework, messing with your life in some way, altering and interfering with your private kingdom? Or will you be like the so-called wise men in the palace who know the Bible, who know it with their heads, but don't act on it? It's just an intellectual exercise, a theoretical exercise. You know it's important, but you don't do anything about it. Is that you? Or will you be like the true wise men? They know with their hearts. They come wanting to know about the Bible. They want to know how Jesus is described. They put everything second to seeing and knowing this great new king. And so they were rewarded with overwhelming joy at seeing him, at meeting him, at knowing him. Now, that might not be something that happens every day for us as Christians, but by God's grace, it will happen often if we meditate and think of this great king that we have, King Jesus. So, no, this story isn't just about woolly or fabric toys in a little country church. It's so much more. It's about the proper worship of the King of the universe. The good news of the new King Jesus is there in the whole Gospel of Matthew. Read it and see. See that he is worthy of our worship, worthy of our joyful, our heartfelt delight, our worship. Jesus was who the Bible says he was. That's what Matthew goes on to say. He was who the wise men believed he was. By dying and rising again, he proved it. And now today, he was and is to come. And Jesus says at the end of the gospel, alive again, he says, "And behold, I am with you always, even to the end of the age." And that's how he sends his disciples out. So be encouraged. He is worthy. He is worthy of yours and my worship today and into the new year. Amen.